1340 WNBS.com presents the Neil Bradley Show. Your expanded look at local and regional sports with weekly guests or experts in their field. With today's show, here's Neil Bradley.
It is Tuesday, the final day of 2019. Usually we have Josh Planos on Tuesday. Josh has another commitment today, so Josh will return next week, and we'll have our usual Tuesday show with Josh Planos coming up next week. So a lot to talk about: college football, playoffs, NBA, NFL, and more. So we've bumped Ed Marlowe. He's been kind enough to move his slot to Tuesday, and so that's the reason we have Ed Marlowe on. The last time we checked in with Ed Marlowe, he was a passenger on his way to Disney. And the way that I know everything worked out for everyone, and everyone had a great Christmas. We're both back here safely. Both got some goodies for Christmas, I guess. And sounded like you had a terrific time. I am a little disappointed that you didn't bring your lightsaber in, but whatever. Maybe next time.
Hey, listen, I'll bring you to the next press conference if you want.
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yes. Please do that and show it to Matt.
Oh, you know, first of all, I want to start off by saying that there's no way I could ever replace Josh Planos, by the way. Just his resume alone speaks for itself. There's no way. So the fact that I'm taking his spot, I almost feel unworthy. But secondly, yes, I was actually surprised to learn at this press conference that, and I'm sure because he's, you know, a large icon, it makes sense. There are a lot of people that have enjoyed my photos with Chewbacca.
Who wouldn't?
Yeah, because a lot of them have me in my natural habitat, basically just laughing hysterically at a 7'2".
If it wasn't for the height, though, I had trouble telling the difference. But the height thing is like he's taller than Ed. So
we look about the same.
Right now, you do.
Yeah. No, I'm definitely been rocking a little bit of a longer beard, and so No Shave November turned into Don't Do It December is what I said. So my wife likes a longer beard, and quite frankly, it's finally getting cold enough to have it, so I've kind of let it roll a little bit, but we digress. Yes, the lightsaber potentially could make an appearance.
All right.
At some point at a press conference, what we ought to do is just have a dark room waiting and turn it on. I mean, it's fully functioning.
Oh,
I mean, outside of it actually being able to cut things and slice open metal doors and take down Jedis and droids alike, the lightsaber is fairly hefty.
Does it make the noise?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a Force Effects lightsaber.
Yes.
I mean, my wife, I'm not even ashamed to say this. It's a $200 lightsaber. I mean, outside of it.
Yeah, but you didn't pay for it.
No,
right?
it was a gift to you. It was my Christmas gift.
There you go.
Yeah. So, Force Effects lightsabers are actually fairly expensive right now because of the quality. They are what I would consider an industrial plastic blade with a large emitting light mechanism inside of them that, I mean, when you turn it on, you hear it power up.
Yeah, if I didn't hear it, I would hand it back.
Yeah,
I want the sound.
The hilt, the sword's handle is easily 10 to 15 pounds. It's heavy. It kind of reminds me, and I'm going to go into some Dungeons & Dragons stuff here, it kind of reminds me of a light bastard sword. Like, it's heavy enough to wield with two hands and swing at people. Yeah,
oh,
it's
fantastic.
It's impressive. I mean, you know, back in the 70s, kids were taping things to their flashlights.
What I want to know, if you bring this, will public safety come on and arrest you for bringing a weapon onto campus? Is it considered a weapon on campus?
I don't think it is, because it actually had a tag on it. We could fly with it, according to flight regulations.
Oh, in the cat? Oh, nice.
But
yeah.
I did not fly with it because I didn't want it to get broken on the flight.
Oh, I understand.
I mean, it's not that fragile, but I didn't want like three suitcases coming onto this thing. I mean, this thing is expensive.
Okay. Well, I would have thought. Surely to gosh,
It has a foam sheath.
Yeah.
That I got as part of the deal.
Oh man!
Yeah, it goes in. I mean, it was legit. We spent about 45 minutes building it with like the story of the Jedi being told while we're putting this thing together.
What were the rest of the highlights that you had on your trip?
So honestly, I thought the biggest highlight for me was Avatar's Flight of Passage, and Star Wars: Rise of the Resistance. Honestly, those two rides they get a lot of the talk anyways with how long the lines have been. I don't want to spoil a single thing about either ride for any listener. There's only two. It's Dave Winder and one of Dave's friends that happens to be with him at the time. But those two rides are changing the way Disney is going to be giving you its adventure on a daily basis. They're already working on the Tron Legacy. roller coaster, which is, I suggest anyone who is interested in rides to look on YouTube and see. Japan already has it at their Disneyland, because they're huge Tron fans anyways. That's going to be an experience that a rider will never forget. Basically, you're going to be in a unicycle type situation that's lit up, and you're going to be on your chest, and you're just going to be flying at 80 miles an hour through the Tron atmosphere, and it's going to be ridiculous. But Rise of the Resistance and Flight of Passage are both two rides, in my opinion, that are just so immersive. They take over every sense you can possibly imagine. Your smell, your sight, your hearing, you know, your touch, you know, just your emotions in general. And you're going to be taken on a thrill ride for 20 minutes. Like, I mean, just set aside the afternoon because they're worth your time. And so those two rides alone are what changed, are what's changing Disney right now. Don't get me wrong, I love Space Mountain, you know, Rock and Roller Coaster, Star Tours, you know, the shopping, the food. But as far as those two rides are concerned, that's the direction Disney is going as far as the experience. And it was pretty fascinating to be a part of it.
It's been a while, actually, since I've been to Disneyland, or Disney World is what it was. Yeah, in Orlando. They hadn't built Space Mountain. And I think they had the new president, Lincoln, I think. So it's been a long, long time.
It's been a little while.
Since I've been there.
Yeah, because if Lincoln was the new president when you were in, they didn't have the Hall of Presidents, which now is actually just added Donald Trump as its newest member.
Yeah, yeah.
Of the full animatronics.
Keep up, whoever's the president, you got to get the new one.
Yeah, no, the animatronics of
But I was amazed at it, honestly, at the Hall of Presidents. That's one of the most, that, and they had some dancing bear thing or something. What are the huge bears that did something? I don't know what it was.
I'm not sure I know about the dancing bears, but definitely the Hall of Presidents.
They were the two amazing. They weren't actual bears. They were animatronic bears, but it was like, dang, that's actually pretty good.
Well, and that was the other thing, too. So when we went on our honeymoon 5 years ago, my wife and I didn't get a chance to get the full experience of Magic Kingdom because we kind of went at a time and that it was really busy. And it was busy this time. Don't get
me
wrong.
Had to make your own Magic Kingdom. But go ahead.
Hey,
I digress.
We definitely – that was really good, Neil. We actually had to we got to experience Magic Kingdom in its full capacity this time around. We rode 11 rides. On Magic Kingdom, I finally got to ride Splash Mountain. I got to ride Seven Dwarfs Mine Train. I got to ride Thunder Mountain Railroad, which are all older, more conventional roller coasters, but they're really good experiences. We just didn't have time the last time to do that. This time around, we walked 35,000 steps in 3 days. Nuts, man. I think I did the math on it. It was roughly 30 miles of walking.
Well, I'm going to cram in just a little more Star Wars. We might as well do 10 minutes of it.
Might
since
as well.
We're close to it anyway. I saw the Star Wars movie. I don't understand all the hate. I thought it was terrific, but some people think it's the worst thing ever. What the heck's going on? Why is there a fraction of people who think it's horrible? I thought it was good.
Spoilers. So I'm going to just, if you have not seen it in the 2 weeks, spoilers, cut it here if you don't want to hear anything. So here we are. Now we're
clear. I'll put it in the text as to what time it's safe to come back.
That's fine. The 9 minute mark here, we're going to start talking about Star Wars. Yes. So the argument against it is that it was a shill of a film. That it basically didn't have the hooks and turns that people somewhat expected. They weren't surprised to see that Rey was a Palpatine.
Didn't know anything about it.
They thought Palpatine's return was phony and silly. They didn't particularly like Rose Tico's arc, which is barely existent in the final film, when she played a major role in The Last Jedi. There are a lot of people coming out in support of Rian Johnson's Last Jedi because it was a different piece of art. And then this piece of art supposedly crapped on that piece of art. So I will say that while I find the final trilogy to be a little bit disjointed, and I do, you had J.J. Abrams, then you had Rian Johnson, then you had J.J. Abrams, and you had all these different people coming in and writing all these different parts. The harmony, I'm not sure, is there. However, I will say that I think it's extremely plausible that in the early the mid-70s to the early 80s, people had these kind of arguments for A New Hope, Empire Strikes Back, and Return of the Jedi. Think about the harmony there. Luke Skywalker kisses his sister at the beginning of The Empire Strikes Back.
Oh, yeah. Played well in Kentucky, though.
Yeah, yeah, played super well in Kentucky, especially the eastern part of the state. But my argument here is that Star Wars has always been an organic, living, breathing organism that has involved so many different people over 40 years of experience. There are multiple stories that are going to be generated. Furthermore, Disney has made it their purpose to not fill in every crack because they want you to buy all the extra stuff to go with it. They want you getting comic books. They want you getting video games. They want you getting, go get Disney Plus and watch The Mandalorian. Not that The Mandalorian is not tied to The Rise of Skywalker, but this immersive galaxy doesn't just come in the form of 9 films. There's now Rogue One. There's now Solo. There's now cartoons. There's now, you know, everything. T-shirts, magazines, books, novellas, online fan fiction, all of the above that helps add to the experience. What a lot of people are really upset about, and this is what I was getting to, what a lot of people are upset about is they don't think Rise of Skywalker is complete. They don't think Rise of Skywalker had enough meat to it to finish off the Skywalker saga. Furthermore, I think a lot of people were frustrated at the pace of the movie. And while I will say that it is an extremely rapid pace, you probably don't need to go to the bathroom. Like, everybody's got the app on their phone, and this is the one movie that you're just like, don't go to the bathroom. It's like, oh, crap, you know, and I actually had to. I was that guy. I'd had so much to drink the whole day, walking all day, that we got to the theater, we finally sat down. I just went, I know the moment when I went, so I know I didn't miss much, but I miss the transition when they go get, when that right before they're about to get C-3PO to reveal where, you know, what the Sith translation on the dagger is. So that to me, I knew what was coming up, but anyways, we could talk about it for a while, but what it's created it's created this vitriol of fans that absolutely loved it versus fans that absolutely hated it. And really, I think it's kind of indicative of the times that we live in.
Yeah.
If you really think about it. I mean, it's just a Star Wars movie, but it is extremely divisive because, and this is partly sociological, but we're fairly divisive. We have a hard time finding the middle ground right now, and Star Wars has certainly split one of the crazier fan bases in all of science fiction, movies, music, sports. Star Wars fans are nuts. So I enjoyed it for what it was.
I did too. Thought it was good. Mandalorian finished that up. Rather than spoil it, I enjoyed it. Kind of a different deal, but I thought it was terrific.
It's terrific. I recommend it to anybody. I will spoil nothing, and I am ready for season 2. Absolutely.
Me too. I saw that. It's late 2020? Is that right?
Not only is it going to be late 2020, but they have also confirmed that we will get a tie to some major characters.
Wow.
I don't know which ones. It is rumored that Skywalkers will be involved, but I could potentially see that being more hologram-type situations where they're seeing, like, transmissions. I don't know if we'll get live actors. I mean, obviously, you know, rest in peace, Carrie Fisher. We can't get Princess Leia tied in. Okay. And I don't know if they'll be CGI-related, but it's been pretty much confirmed that this storyline is going to start taking on a much more, I'm going to make up a word here, galactical effect. It's going to start taking on the Star Wars galaxy and its entire pantheon by bringing in some major characters that will involve, we can already talk about it, Baby Yoda, and potentially the Mandalorian himself.
Are we going to name the thing?
You know, I don't know. I think it actually does have a name, but we still don't know its race or origin.
Yeah.
We really don't.
That'll be season 2.
We do not know what planet this race comes from, which Yoda and Yaddle, from the prequel trilogy. We don't know where they're from or why they're force sensitive.
Yeah.
But what I do know is Baby Yoda is a straight badass.
Oh,
and he's
only
like 52 years old.
Could kind of help you out in a pinch, that's for sure. So go check that out. Favorite Christmas present? Putting you on the spot here. What'd you get? Or do you have more than one?
I got a racquetball bag.
You did?
So I no longer walk around with like a little like plastic Walmart bag.
And
like,
I just got a text from Winder wanting to know where the podcast is. So
did you really?
Yeah. So
of course you did.
Any personal message that you have to pass along?
Yeah.
To Winder.
So I got a new racquetball bag.
So you're gonna look like a pro now.
Yeah. Well, yesterday I got my rear end handed to me as I returned to the racquetball court. And it's like I told Dave, and it's what I told my mother-in-law. My mother-in-law is who got it for me.
Christmas lag.
Well, yeah. Well, not only is it Christmas lag, but it's like I told her, I can now lose in style.
That's right.
I go in. I'm the white guy who like steps on a court with like the new jumpsuit.
Yeah.
You know, new basketball shorts.
Right.
New jersey. Brick. Miss layup. Miss free throw.
But you look good doing it.
I look great.
Yeah.
Yeah, new glasses and a new racquetball bag. I'm good to go.
All right. That sounded like a good one. I can't think of anything. I actually bought my own Christmas present. I asked for Amazon money so I could buy some Bose earbuds.
Oh, that's awesome.
So I got those.
I love Bose. Anything Bose related is terrific.
That was my favorite, and then got the usual good stuff. So more than I deserve, for sure.
I got two more things that I got for Christmas that blew my mind. I got a yard,
okay.
Of Twix bars.
Oh, a yard of what?
Twix bars.
Okay.
A yard. Like, you could get them at Sam's.
Yeah.
I have 3 feet of Twix bars.
Oh, my gosh.
I haven't even started them yet. That's going to be a work in progress. I'm going to have to save that. I also got two large bags of low-sodium Twix popcorn.
So we can cross off eating well in the new year off your resolutions.
It's already gone. Done.
Gotcha. Yeah,
get it off there. Right. That will not be a resolution this season.
Do you have any resolutions? You have
I think one of my resolutions this year will be to be less hyperbolic.
Okay.
In my writing. Because sometimes my writing can be a bit, I don't want to say over the top, but I can definitely editorialize from time to time, and I think that's a work resolution for me, is to editorialize fewer times. I know that people are seeking my opinion sometimes. I know that people want to hear what I have to say sometimes. Most of the time they don't, but sometimes they do. But I would like to editorialize less often.
Okay. All right. I have three. Number one, no lists for the year. Be more consistent. And seven, learn how to count. Mm-hmm. So those are my three that I got.
How long have you been working on that joke?
It's been a long time. It's been
it's good. Hard. I like it though.
All right. Hey, we actually have some Murray State sports to talk about. Before we talk about current sports, you and I were reminiscing before we went on about really an amazing year as it was. A lot of it dominated by basketball in terms of what I do for a living, because that's what I follow, but other sports too. But also the decade had a lot of highs for the Murray State Athletic Department as well.
Well, I think the crazy thing is you bookend with Denaro Thomas's shot in 2010, and you end with Ja Morant doing pretty ridiculous things, which is two really nice pieces of bread for what's been a fun decade sandwich, not just for men's basketball, but really you think about some of the top moments for Murray State athletics just in the last 10 years. There have been some really, really bright spots for multiple sports, and I mean, without taking another half an hour to talk about it, if you really think about some of the brighter moments, yes, men's basketball, you saw what they tweeted today. You know, you've got five guys that have, you know, been, I believe, All-Americans. And, you know, you've got three draft picks all at the point guard position, and Isaiah Cam and Ja. You know, excuse me, you've got five regular season championships. You've got three NCAA tournament appearances, including two wins. Men's basketball speaks for itself. It's been a pretty dominant decade for Murray State men's basketball. But then you think about the success that Murray State volleyball's had under Dave Schwepker and how that turned around under Scotty Ingram and that class, you know, and how good volleyball has been since that lump season in the early 2010s. You know, they took a lump season and then really built a winner powerhouse under Schwepker in these, you know, really in the later part of his career. And I don't mean to put a twilight on it. I don't think he's done coaching by any stretch of the imagination.
Sure. Yeah.
But, you know, he's in his 22, 23 seasons now. And it's during this second half renaissance that women's volleyball's really taken off to the next level. And the same with women's soccer. That's a sport at Murray State that had a couple of decent seasons and success under Beth Eckerman. And then, you know, Groves comes in and now Lodge comes in. And all of a sudden you're seeing the growth there as far as women's soccer is concerned. I mean, this is a roster with 35 women. Maya Watford just did the unthinkable just this season alone to cap the decade. You know, you talk about Velvet Milkman and how successful women's golf has been in this decade. You could talk about Rifle and how Alan Lawler in this decade has been extremely successful. I know other sports have continued to try and build. Baseball and softball are kind of in that conversation. Look at what track and field has done just in the last 4 years combined and how successful they've been. In the early 2000s, it was Alexis Love who was just named, you know, 2008, 2009. She was just named a Hall of Famer, you know, and it's closed with people like Tamdra Lawrence and you know, and Adam, you know, winning Coach of the Year. So it's just, it's one of those things where multiple sports have had a great decade at Murray State, but obviously, you know, I'd put football in there as far as a few wins are concerned. They've had a few horseshoe wins, but that they're probably the one sport, and then I haven't even mentioned women's tennis. They've won several championships since 2009,
right, yeah,
and how successful they've been. First under Ogle, now under George. So it's you know, football's probably the one sport that hasn't had the greatest decade, but they have some marquee wins all interspersed with that. Three coaching changes, unfortunately, right. But you know, 2020 is, it's all about new vision. So we'll see where 2020 to 2029 takes us. If I'm still writing about Murray State Athletics in 2029, hey, who knows?
that's likely. The odds of me doing games then, probably unlikely.
Let's see. How old will you be in 2029?
Well, let's see. I'm 64 now, so.
You'll be 74.
Yeah, that's not going to happen.
You're not going to be 74 calling games?
No, don't think so.
Don't think so?
No. Love of fried foods and sweets will basically ensure that.
Okay. All right.
You know, because I like ropes of Twix or whatever. You know, that's
what I should do is melt them all together and make one giant Twix bar.
Yeah,
and then die in a coma.
There you go. I mean, if you're gonna go. What a way to go.
But it's true. But the decade for Murray State Athletics, and you probably have some other memories too. But I'm just thinking about the multiple sports across the avenues. It's been a really successful 10-year stretch for most athletics at Murray State, but probably none better than Murray State men's basketball.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you get three NCAA tournament wins. You get Colorado State, Vanderbilt, Marquette. Two of those by double digits. You get a buzzer beater. So just a lot of terrific things. And you never know what's to come. I mean, no one would have ever predicted you're going to get a number two NBA draft pick.
Mm-mm.
You'd been like, even at the start of last year, if you'd said that, like, now come on, he might get drafted, but number two, it's
I
not,
mean,
that
when
isn't going to happen.
When the season started, I thought Ja was a first round pick, but first round pick can be 1 through 30.
Yeah.
It can be anything.
Sure.
I did not know that he would be number two, nor did I think he would continue to take that momentum and push for NBA Rookie of the Year.
Exactly, as he's doing right now. Well, let's move to the present and talk Murray State basketball. We'll start with the men. They are 7-5. They've had to muddle through a lot of injuries. I've never really seen anything quite like this. It seems like there's another one week to week. They should get Javion Eaves back. I think they're projecting that he'll be back Thursday, so we'll see. But if that happens, they can at least take one name off the list. So that'll be good. They just got Jay Holiday back. He played one of his better games last time out. But when you take a look at their schedule, they have 5 losses, only one to a team with a losing record. That's Missouri State at 6-7, team picked to win the Missouri Valley Conference. Not really a bad loss on there. As far as I'm concerned, they played pretty much a difficult schedule that hopefully will set them up for some success if they can get healthy.
Well, and not only that, you take a look at what Missouri State's done. If I'm not mistaken, they play Evansville tonight, New Year's Eve. Is that correct?
Maybe.
I think that's right, actually. I think Missouri and the Evansville, man, that's a tough situation just all around. But, you know, you take you take what Missouri State's body of work has been, and I know that they've not shown all of the promise that they've, you know, intended to have at the beginning of the season. But, man, they're good. Mm-hmm. You know, they're the type of team that probably could run off, you know, rip off 10, 11 straight wins in the Missouri Valley, and then all of a sudden they're back in that conversation. So non-conference slates do that. You don't ever really know what you get until you get into conference play. And the Missouri Valley looks like a one big league again this year. So I don't really know what to take of Missouri State's start to the season. But they were terrific the night they played the Racers, especially in that second half. But back to the Racers, you're exactly right. I hate to keep harping on it. I know I've written about it 2 or 3 times. Health is a big concern right now. Not I don't want to hit the red button just yet as far as alarms are concerned, but I mean, they're probably sick and tired of not having 13 guys able to play. You know, last year, injuries weren't too much of an issue.
Anthony Smith was it, basically.
Anthony Smith was it, and you thought when he got hit with it, you thought, oh, man, no, really can't start this bug. And then nobody else really got banged up. I mean, there were some bumps and bruises along the way. It's basketball. It's a 30-game season, you know. Those types of things happen. But you take a look, I'd say Darnell Cowart obviously has not realized his full potential of his senior season based on injuries. Javion Eaves has not been able to fully realize his potential of his senior season based on injuries. I think Jason, you know, Holiday has not been able to really realize his full potential offensively because of a couple of injuries. Breon Whitley still hasn't taken the floor. Matt Smith still hasn't taken the floor. Chico Carter has been out now since, what, the Drake game? In the Gulf Coast Showcase, his return is probably not imminent. I'm not a doctor by any stretch of the imagination, despite being labeled one. But I do know that these guys are all on the mend, and it's not ideal. And then DaQuan Smith got banged up the other night against Cumberland, and I think he'll be fine. But I mean, he was down on the floor for a minute, and you're just kind of wondering, like, man, really? Like, you're down to Noah Kamba as your point guard, and I'm not attacking that. I think Noah has made leaps and strides.
He has, yeah.
Over the last 48 hours, really, just even since Saturday, just has started to change. I thought his second half. I will be honest. I'll go briefly back to Disney. I saw the score at halftime of Murray State Evansville, and I was like, ah, I see the turnovers. Okay, this is how this is going to be. And then I saw where they tied it at 56 all. We were on one of the trams, and we were on our way somewhere else, and I saw it. And we were on our way back to the hotel room anyways, and my wife was about to pass out. And I was like, yeah, I'm turning this on. So I watched – I did watch the final 7 minutes plus overtime of the Murray State-Evansville game via ESPN+. Didn't have your call, which was frustrating. I wanted your and Kenny's call, but I couldn't get that synced in time. But I watched the ESPN+ finish plus overtime of Murray State Evansville, and I thought it was terrific. Tevin Brown, outside after his offer against Kennesaw State, has been a completely different player. And he's been a terrific player all season long. It's not even about the points. This is a kid who's quite frankly turning into a man in front of all of us. He is taking over a scoring load. Now, will that continue in the OVC? I don't necessarily know. I think the front court for Murray State is going to be extremely successful in the OVC this year. But, I mean, you take a look at just what's gone on with the Racers in the last 2 weeks. And, I mean, injuries have really, really played a toll since Thanksgiving. And it's going to be really interesting to see how they navigate that when it comes to conference play starting this Thursday. Because, again, I don't have a timetable, and I don't know if McMahon and his staff have a timetable for some of these guys returning. I mean, outside of Javion Eaves, who's going to be back sooner rather than later? I don't really know. Maybe Chico? Maybe Darnell Cowart? I don't really know. I don't have any clarity on that.
Well, they get a UT Martin team that I thought was easily going to be in the top four this season in terms of the league. A lot of firepower. They're averaging 77.3. Matt McMahon telling me they're one of the most offensively efficient teams in the league, but they're giving up 83 points per game. So there's their issue. They have two outstanding players in Quentin Dove and the newcomer Parker Stewart. Derek Hawthorne, a former teammate of Javion Eaves, also averaging in double digits. They did lose Craig Randall. He was booted off the team in mid-December, so that's another guy that potentially could get you 20 points per game. They have great size, but their issue has been the defense. But if the defense is average, they have enough offense to beat any team in the league.
They do. But I will say this, their defense is hot garbage.
It's bad.
And if UT Martin's listening to this podcast for some strange reason, fine. I don't mind saying it. It's bad. They have the worst three-point defense in the league.
50% from the field.
They have the worst three-point defense in the country, Neil.
42% from three range. 42. Mm-hmm. There's teams, you could not guard them, and they can't hit 42% as a team.
It's awful. And their schedule, quite frankly, I don't think their schedule's been that tough. Now, I could be totally wrong there, and they come in on Thursday, and I'm not going to pick a winner. But as far as analyzing and the numbers that I see, UT Martin's defense has been a sieve, quite frankly. And that's part of the reason that they've not been as successful in the non-conference slates. They've not been able to stop anybody.
Well, they had a 50-day road trip, too. 50 days between home games.
And that's a good point. Yeah, that's a very good point. 50 days and not being at home can be a difference maker as far as defense is concerned. But if there's one thing they've got to look at and get better at in 2020, it's defense. That's for sure.
They can't get much worse than that.
Right.
So they will improve.
They will, absolutely. Furthermore, I will completely agree with you. They have one of the most prolific offenses in the league, and they're also one of the biggest teams in the country. Matt McMahon mentioned it. You mentioned it. You look at their roster, and you look at the guys they can throw out there if they need to. 6'11", 6'11", 7 foot, 7 foot, 6'10".
Yeah.
And they got some size at a lot of different spots. And there's no question Quentin Dove and Parker Stewart are going to win them games alone, yeah, the two of them combined.
Because you have a night that you can't make shots, and that happens.
Yeah.
To every team. So you just get a night, man, we can't throw it in the ocean. They'll beat you.
Right.
Because they're that good offensively.
Right.
So we'll see how that goes. The Racers, of course, would be favored in this one, no doubt. And then Southeast Missouri, boy, it's just been kind of a rough few years for them, and it's continuing. They're basically in the same boat as Martin record-wise.
Well, and not only that are they in the same boat record-wise, but then it's really tough. You go look and see what Denzel Mahoney's doing for Creighton right now.
Oh, yeah.
Man, he'd be awfully good in the league. He'd probably be the face of the league right now, actually. I don't mean that. I mean, don't get me wrong. There are some great, great, talented players in the league this year. Terry Taylor, Nick Mazinski, Grayson Murphy, Tevin Brown, Anthony Smith. These are all guys that are bringing a lot of levity to the league and the talent that they bring and the skill sets that they have. But, ooh, he's doing some really, really good things for Creighton right now off the bench. At least was a couple weeks ago when he first got back into the rotation. And finally cleared eligibility. So that's tough. And, I mean, I hate that for Rick Ray, but, I mean, who does SEMO even have right now that you could count on in their starting five that's going to change a game? I can't name a guy.
I can't at the moment either.
Yeah, and that's – I mean, Ladarius Brewer even transferred, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah.
They played a really difficult stretch. They beat Missouri Baptist to stop a four-game losing streak. They'd lost six out of seven, but they played at Santa Clara, Cal State Fullerton, at Drake, Youngstown State, Ohio State, Southern Illinois, and those were all road games too.
Yeah, and I mean, and that's the one thing that I will say that I noted a couple of weeks ago. I know it's been some tested schedules for teams. I don't think people in the league – I don't think teams in the league have played bad schedules, not really. But you really don't have a marquee win in the league right now. If you really look at it, you go look even at Belmont's schedule. What's Belmont's best win? Western?
Boston College.
Boston College on the road, yeah, is probably their best win. Yeah, I think that's better than Western. Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, fine. I'll give
Belmont.
But
they have four road wins and no one else is even close.
That's true. But I still just don't think Belmont... I just don't think the league is as good this year as it was last year. And maybe that's an easy take because of all the talent that graduated. I mean, Ja, Dylan Windler, yeah, Kevin McClain, Nick Mayo. I mean, you know, even a couple of guys at Austin Peay, Chris Porter Bunton, who ended up being terrific last year. You know, I don't really see just jump off the page, these dudes are the next level right now. But I could be wrong. I'm wrong a lot. So
Alex Caldwell is SEMO's leading scorer in terms of the top 30 in the OVC. He's 24th at 10.2. So, I mean, that's kind of their go-to guy offensively.
So they're really just lacking an offensive punch at the moment.
And like you say, the one thing they probably hadn't planned for is losing Mahoney.
Well, and Murray State, honestly, this week is – I mean, they will be tested because the UT Martin game is probably going to be pretty electric, pretty amped. I think a lot of people are really excited about OVC's place finally starting. UT Martin does bring in an offensive punch. Then you got SEMO at home on Saturday. Can you start 2-0 in the league and move to 9-5? I mean, that'd be a great momentum shifter for the Racers, who, quite frankly, would like a boost right now. The one thing I will say that this team continues to do, the one thing that this team can hang its hat on, and there's other things that I think that it'll eventually be able to hang its hat on, but you can actually put like a poster on the door, put your hat on it, and call it a day. This team rebounds the hell out of the basketball.
Yeah, they're good at that.
They are top 10 in the country right now in rebounding margin. They were 13th going into the game against Cumberland. They out-rebounded Cumberland by 22. They out-rebounded Evansville by 18. It just so happened that they let 20 turnovers turn into 37 points, which is not ideal. So, you limit the turnovers and you continue to rebound the basketball at that rate, you're going to win a lot of games in the OVC, because guess who has size in the OVC? Nobody. Outside of, like, Nick Mazinski at Belmont and Adelsberger as well, I just don't see anybody that has this kind of consistent size in the front court than the Racers do.
The game I'm looking at for Thursday night is Eastern Illinois, Tennessee State. Two surprise teams. Mm-hmm. That one is in Nashville. One of those teams is going to take a loss right out of the gate, but both have been, to me, amazing surprises. They are two of the four teams that have winning records. And then Eastern Illinois plays at Belmont. So that means they get tested right out of the gate. Somehow they can win those two. Suddenly you're looking at Eastern Illinois being, whoa. And if you know anything about them, they usually start great, sometimes fade. That's kind of their mantra over the last several years. We'll see.
If they take one of them.
Yeah, one of two would be good.
You take one of them in Nashville. I don't care which one it is. You lose to Tennessee State, take Belmont, or lose to Belmont, take Tennessee State. That would be an eye-opener. You're exactly right. Tennessee State and Eastern Illinois have both had terrific starts to their season.
All right, let's talk Racer women. We were on the road, I guess, at Evansville the night before, looking at the Samford score, and oh my God, I couldn't believe really what I was seeing. And I do know Samford, they got one of their players back that night that made a big impact for them, but for the Racers, basically worst case scenario. But they were able to shake that off, bounce back with a victory. To me, still, in terms of wins and losses, based on some of the players who didn't return, they're still better off than I thought they would be. But as Rochelle Turner says, small margin of error. They have to do so many things well to win ball games, and more often than not this season, they've been able to do those against the teams they're supposed to meet.
I think the tough part about it for the Samford game was just another one of those terrible first quarters. They had a terrible first quarter against SIU, and I think it kind of just seeped over. Samford was a lot of things the Racers aren't. A little bit faster, a little bit more athletic, and a little bit bigger. And that's not to knock anything about Murray State women's basketball. I think they've done some terrific things this season, and I'm not even hedging my bet on this. I think if Macy Turley finishes with the statistics that she has right now in league play, 80-85% of them at least, and puts out that type of production, and they make the tournament again, despite the turnover, the defections, the transfers, you have to have Macy Turley in your conversation for Player of the Year. I know there's Harmeyer. I know that there's Chelsea Perry at UT Martin. I know there's Tecia Thompson at SEMO. She is a face of a franchise right now. And I don't keep making this argument because people have been making it against me. I just want people to understand the numbers that Macy Turley is putting up right now, despite teams knowing what she has to do. She's averaging a league best 19 plus per game. She's averaging a league best assists per game. She's averaging a league best free throw shooting per game. She's still a top 5 3-point shooter now, knowing full and well that that's what she has to do to create separation, is to shoot the three well. She's shooting 41% from three. These are things, those types of numbers, if she does 85% of that in league play, and let's say they go 10-8 or 9-9, which has notoriously gotten women's teams into the tournament, or even let's say even 11-7, let's bump it up a little bit. Maybe they pound on the bottom of the league. All of a sudden, I mean, Macy Turley's a star. That being said, there are other players around her that are certainly chipping in their effort. Lacey Hawthorne is rebounding at a high rate. Alexis Burpo is rebounding at a high rate. Lex Mays is top 20 in scoring in the league. She's been a very efficient spark plug away from Macy. I'm sure she wants her shooting percentages up. I'm sure the whole team wants their shooting percentages up. That's probably been their Achilles heel. Mm-hmm. When they're not making shots, there's only so much defense you can play, you know, at that point. But when they're making shots, when they're shooting 30% or better from three, they're winning, you know, because they're defending well. If you check right now, I'm pretty sure their three-point defense is pretty solid. It's in the 30% range. And they can continue to play that, rebound the basketball in an effective way, as effective as they can, considering their tallest player is, I believe, Macy Gibson, you know, who's having a pretty solid freshman year after missing all of last year. And all of a sudden, this is a team that can contend. I don't know about top four, but I would say back in the tournament for a third straight season.
Well, they're going to find out this week because they play two top four teams.
Yes, they do.
And Martin and SEMO. SEMO, second winningest team in the league, right behind Belmont. And then UT Martin played a really difficult schedule. Arkansas, Louisville, took Louisville to double overtime at home. I mean, two big tests. You want to get both, but honestly, you get one of these two, that's still a pretty good week.
Yeah, and that's, you know, they had that mantra a lot last season. We're not going to go 0 for any week. If they can steal one of these, and I say steal, I would say SEMO and UT Martin are likely favored in both of these.
Yeah, I would
situations.
Think so. If you were running a gambling site, I would say, yeah, they'd be favored in both.
If you could steal one of these, you're going to be in decent shape. But I think the goal this year, once again, let's not go 0 for on any specific game week. And, I mean, you don't go 0 for any specific game week, and you go 9-9.
Yeah.
I mean, that gets you in the tournament.
If they can split with the top teams and then beat the teams at the bottom are supposed to be, they'll be 500 or a better record, and that'll put them in a good spot in the tournament. And that's kind of what they're looking for.
If
right
this
now.
Team comes away with 17 wins by the end of the season,
gosh.
You have to – there is an argument. There is an argument for Rochelle being coach of the year.
There would have to be. Yeah.
But – we have 3 months to see how this
right.
unfolds.
And so. I like the way she put it. It's an 18-round heavyweight fight. They're going to punch us. We'll punch them. Not literally, of course, figuratively speaking. And whoever's left standing will be the champion. And that's kind of the way it is. Because in conference play, they know everything about you. You know everything about them. By now, there's no surprises.
Not
there's film on everything. And no one's going to go, wow, I didn't know they had that player. They know everything about that player right now.
Yeah, and the thing about it is, Rochelle made a great point on Monday. Macy understands. Alexis sort of understands, but not really. She didn't play these kind of minutes last year, but she did become serviceable later in the season. She was a huge game on the road against SEMO last year that kind of elevated her to the next level. But I mean, there's not many women on this team. Yeah, they may be coalescing right now. They don't really understand the rigors of OVC play. Not yet. I mean, if you really think about it, outside of Macy Turley, who's got the experience in the OVC on this roster? Lex Mays. That's about it.
Yeah, you're right.
So it's a lot of, and who knows, maybe ignorance is bliss. And I don't mean that like ignorance, like they're ignorant. I mean, like, maybe they just go in and they just play basketball, you know. But sometimes the knowledge of the league can be in your favor. That's an easy statement to make. But who knows, maybe Lacey Hawthorne gets in here and she'd be like, whatever, I'm just going to play basketball. And maybe Macy Gibson's just like, man, I missed last season. I'm ready. I mean, she was on the road the whole time just getting to watch. So maybe she's ready to just be like, you know what? I'm ready. I'm ready for league play. But it's a different animal because matchup-wise, Rochelle's right. The league is a little bit more even this year than it was last year, which means a lot of the games are going to be, I think, what I would consider grinders.
Yeah.
8 to 10-point wins, you probably win in the third or fourth quarter.
Yeah.
And can be the difference between a win and a loss.
All right, Ed, big New Year's plans tonight? Do you have any New Year's traditions you have to...
Dude, we're going to Red Lobster at 6:45 in Paducah, and then we'll probably just cash it in and call it a day.
That is a day. You don't have to do anything else if you're going to Red Lobster.
True. I've still got to finish a couple other stories, but we are going to actually... Aaron and I are going to go shopping on New Year's Day.
So is Aaron like Red Lobster?
I mean, she's a big fan. Yeah, we're going with a friend, couple of ours.
See, my wife is like 99.9 awesome. She hates seafood. So I know when she says, how would you like to go to Red Lobster tonight?
She wants something.
Something's up her sleeve. We're going to Target somewhere. Mm-hmm. Or something's at Paducah, Sam's Club.
She's making you go shop.
That's what that is.
Well,
so when I go, that's what's on the line.
I'm a cheddar biscuit fan.
Oh, God, they're so good.
They are.
She can make those.
They're
too,
illegal.
Right? Yeah.
They should not be that good.
They are good.
I think there's actually like crack cocaine stuffed inside of them.
Because I'm not supposed to eat a lot of bread, and those are like, don't, would you like more? Well, yes, I would, but don't bring any more.
Well, you just need to tell yourself they're not bread. They're more cheese.
Yeah.
They're more dairy
so
than bread.
That's protein,
you're
right?
Fine.
Yeah, I'm good.
You're good to go.
All right. I don't even know what we're doing tonight. I have to wait for the marching orders, so I guess I'll find out.
Marching orders.
That's it. watching some bowl games tomorrow. I don't even know what I'm going to watch. There's a slew of them on today.
I want to change.
Our football coach is coaching in a bowl game today.
Yes. Yeah. Dean Hood is actually coaching currently as we record this.
Yeah.
At the Belk Bowl. Let's get an update real quick, as I'm sure you'll post this soon. Let's see. As of Kentucky's up 7-3 with 4:20 left in the first quarter. Let's get the box score real quick. Virginia Tech's quarterback is 1-for-5 for -4.
Okay.
Passing yards. Lynn Bowden is 2 for 2 for 30, and the touchdown, of course, has come from him. 4 carries, 44 yards, and a touchdown with less than 4 minutes to go now in the first quarter.
All right. Well, today we have the Sun Bowl on. Tomorrow we have the Outback Bowl, and then it gets better after that. The Birmingham Bowl, whoever's in that, and then we're going to tap it off Friday with the famous Idaho Potato Bowl.
Wow.
And, you know, you don't get them better than whoever's playing in that. Nevada against their opponent.
The real question is, who's in the Burrito Bowl and the Toilet Bowl?
I don't know. Right now, you know, a lot of getting to a bowl is good. So
I understand.
Even if you're 6-6, for your school, it's good.
Yep.
For everyone else, you're going like, hey, our school, it's good. Had a good time.
Western had a big win.
That's nice. We had that on the radio yesterday.
I will certainly recognize that. Western opened its season with another tough FCS loss. I believe it was it in Central Arkansas?
Yeah, I think so.
I think that's right. And they lost. So Western opens the season with a second straight FCS loss, a pay game, the epitome of brutality per John Rothstein. And then yesterday, on a field goal, a walk-off untimed field goal, beat Western Michigan in the First Responders Bowl, 23-20.
So
heck of a win.
We have two bowl teams the Racers will be playing next year. We get Georgia State. Louisville already played in their game, beating Mississippi State. We get Georgia State and Wyoming. They're in the Arizona Bowl. That is one of the bowl games taking place. That one, I think, kicks off at 3:30 Central Time.
Yeah, no, it's not a very – we'll talk a lot of football during the summer, you know, and maybe if we get a spring session in, which I would think this team would with a new coaching staff, but who knows. Maybe a lot of logistics to figure out, but it's not exactly a friendly non-conference schedule for Murray State football next year.
Not at all. Ed, have a terrific new year. Thanks for being on the show throughout 2019, and we'll see you next year.
Sounds good.
All right.
You have been listening to The Neil Bradley Show, or you have fast-forwarded to this point and skipped the show entirely. Tune in weekdays for The Neil Bradley Show on 1340WNBS.com or subscribe free by searching for The Neil Bradley Show on the iTunes podcast app. The Neil Bradley Show is a presentation of WNBS Sports in conjunction with Forever Communications.